Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the Newer Testament. I'm Daniel Henry Price, joined by Eric Sorensen. Just newer in the sense, you know, newer than the other one.
Well, this is true. You can't get around that. I'm not going to tell Chad that you said this, because it might just hint in any sort of way that it's superior, but it's not. It's not superior at all. Same book, Daniel. Just written a little bit closer to our time.
Yeah.
So it's the Newer Testament. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good, yeah. Man. I'm good. The weather has broken.
Beautiful.
It's. Yeah, I mean, I was
nice day here too today too.
Eric, I was outside in a t-shirt yesterday, short sleeves.
I was outside in a t-shirt today too. You know what I was doing today? It's my my youngest son's birthday. He turned 6 today, and so I was making him a Power Wheel today. The Power Wheels.
Ah.
You ever have one of those things?
No.
I never did either. I always saw kids that did and wanted them when I was growing up.
Yeah, like the big wheel on the front and the two small ones on the back.
Yeah, and you know, it's got a little battery and you can go like 5 miles an hour and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, this is what the little guy wanted. So we got it for him. But that meant that there had to be much assembly.
I
spent about 2.5 hours doing that this afternoon. And Dan, you know, I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school when I say that I am not gifted at this kind of thing at all.
I'm not a handyman.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't have those skills. I have no shame in having somebody else do that for me. But I had no such luck today, so I had to pretend like I knew what I was doing. And hopefully it works by the time my son gets home from school today. We'll see.
Right. I always tell my wife, you know, when she wants something done, mm-hmm. like, you know, hey, make that faucet stop dripping. Hey, put that together. I say, hey, listen, you knew this going in, that you married a nearly perfect man, but not an actual perfect man. I mean, you got to let somebody else do the handyman stuff, because if I could do that, I'd be the whole package.
Yeah, I used to have a lot of pride about that. Like, no, don't call anybody. No, I can do it. I can do it. And at some point, you just wake up to the reality. You go, no, I can't. And you know what? Somebody else has that vocation. Let's let them use their God-given talents and gifts to the glory of God and to the benefit of their neighbor, namely me.
That's right. Well, what I did do this weekend is I went down to Tyler, Texas, and went to Mockingbird Tyler. That was a good time.
You did?
I did.
Yeah, I bet.
It was a good time. Got to hang out with all those guys.
The Mockingbird crew is a great crew.
Great group. Kicking it with the Episcopalians.
Yeah. Love me some Episcopalians.
It was good. You know, one thing that they're good at is Dave Zoll is good at this. Whenever you listen to them talk, they're good at, like, they do a lot of, like, cultural stuff, you know. They talk about the culture and then they tie in the theology. And he's good at making you think that he's talking about something out there. And you're like, uh-huh, yeah, that is bad. Then you're like, oh, no, it's me.
Yes.
He's pretty good at that.
Yeah, that's it's true. And their books are good, too. So it's good that we're in partnership with them, because we're really, I mean, same song, same message.
It's the same thing.
Same message. I mean, probably different audiences much of the time, but same stuff.
Yep. Like that crossover. All right. Enough of it. What are we at?
We're in Matthew 26, beginning of verse 57. And so we're sort of right in the heat of the passion narrative. Jesus has just been arrested, and now he is being brought before Caiaphas and the council. It reads like this. Then those who had seized Jesus led him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders had gathered. And Peter was following him at a distance as far as the courtyard of the high priest. And going inside, he sat with the guards to see the end. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking false testimony against Jesus that they might put him to death. But they found none, though many false witnesses came forward. At last, two came forward and said, "This man said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'" And the high priest stood up and said, "Have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you?" But Jesus remained silent. And the high priest said to him, I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, you have said so. But I tell you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his robes and said, he has uttered blasphemy. What further witnesses do we need? You have now heard his blasphemy. What is your judgment? They answered, he deserves death. Then they spit in his face and struck him. And some slapped him, saying, prophesy to us, you Christ. Who is it that struck you?
Man, you know what's interesting about this text? Is that they bring forward a bunch of false witnesses, but it's really the truth that really hacks them off. They start making up, they're like bringing up all these things, making stuff up. But it's not like when this guy comes forward and says, hey, he says he could destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. And then he says, are you the Christ? Those are the two things that really do it. And those two things are true.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know what's more scandalous than the lies? The truth.
Still the same today, Daniel.
It is.
It will never change. What's more scandalous always is the truth of who Jesus Christ is. And the fact is, I mean, you see in this passage a level of control that he has over this scenario. Like he is not being pushed around against his will, but he is allowing them to do what they're doing because he knows why he's there. It is interesting as they seek to find false witnesses, or they seek to find witnesses, that apparently the reason all the false witnesses that did come forward didn't work is because their testimony didn't agree. So they were saying, everyone was saying a different thing. And so, you know, a part of the rule in the Old Testament is that unless something is established by two or three witnesses, it has to be thrown out. And so even though this trial really is not lawful, they're still trying to be somewhat lawful.
Right.
And finally, they get two guys to agree that he said, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days. Indeed, he did say that. That is something he said. Now, of course, when he said that, John clarifies for us that what he was talking about when he said the temple was his body,
right,
that his body would be killed and that he would rise in 3 days. But this is certainly a rumor that had been going around that he was saying this. And even the disciples didn't quite understand what he meant at the time.
Right.
They only realized it later. But the thing that really gets you, it gets them, is when he says, from now on, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. That is a clear declaration from Jesus that he is claiming to be divine.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's an allusion to passages in Daniel, which clearly show a divine figure.
Yeah.
In other words, the Messiah. So he is giving them their answer. Yes, I am the Christ. I am the Son of God. And this is too much.
Too much. And this is what, you know, so you have the priest, I mean, this, ripping his clothes, right?
Yeah.
Tearing his robes. And isn't that the way it is where you get confronted with the reality of what Jesus is really like? When you're confronted with the Messiah that God has chosen to give, not the Messiah that you've come up with in your head, not Jesus as you would make him in your Build-A-God workshop, but the actual Jesus, there will be some, even some religious leaders, even some people who others would look to as pious and devout men that will tear their garments in the horror.
That's right. We have numerous examples of this, and unfortunately, what happened in Judaism has carried over all throughout church history as well, where when the real Jesus shows up, it tends to be that those who are most institutionalized in the church get most scandalized. And so it's a good warning for us because we can sort of look at, you know, the Pharisees or the Sadducees, the Sanhedrin, and we can go, How could they not know? You know, that how could they not bow down and worship him? The fact is, we're prone to that too. We need to, you know, we need to be on guard against that. You know, what is it about Jesus, the real Jesus, that might offend us and make us uncomfortable too?
Well, I mean, yeah. People do this all the time. All the time, people are like, well, if we just all act like Jesus, everyone would love us. Everyone would just, then they would just know.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, well, I mean, they killed Jesus, bro.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, I feel like the apostles were going around doing the kind of things that Jesus did. They killed all them, too.
Yeah. The fact is, and Jesus tells us this. Like, if you're loved by everybody, that's probably not a good sign.
Well, yeah.
It's
and
a
like,
paraphrase.
And the issue says, but, yeah. The issue is, like, if you just acted like Jesus, but I'm like, what Jesus acted like, I know that you're thinking be kind and compassionate and merciful and gracious to people, all of that stuff. You know, I mean, he goes around healing the sick and feeding the hungry and all this kind of thing. So, I mean, it's like, who has a problem with that? Yeah, probably people don't have so much a problem with that, and so we could probably all do that. But start talking about the need for repentance and the forgiveness of sins, and see how that goes over. Because the reality is that Jesus does talk about that stuff. Jesus is the one who says that he's the only way to God. That's a good way to get yourself killed. That's a good way to get yourself hated.
Yeah.
You start talking like that, which is the way Jesus taught. Now he opens that up to everyone. It's not. I mean, yes, it's radically exclusive, but it's also could be no more inclusive because it's anyone, no matter who you are, every station of life, every race, gender, every nationality, everything. No matter who you are, no matter what you've done. The best to the worst, the greatest to the least, all are welcome. So, I mean, it's the gospel is a radically inclusive message that says all can come, but through a very exclusive person, and people don't like that.
Especially in, you know, relativistic Western culture.
Well, that offends us on two fronts. It offends us, one, that we're like, what do you mean everyone? There's some people I'd prefer not be there. There's some people I don't think deserve it. What do you mean,
sure,
everyone? What do you mean, like, someone that's been terrible their whole life?
Yeah.
Like, so we kind of all want, like, a little bit of karma. So, like, it offends that. So grace, the grace of it offends. But also the exclusivity of it offends. Because, like, what do you mean there's only one way? There's any number of ways. No,
yeah.
No, there's one way.
That's arrogant and condescending to say that. Yeah. But in fact, there's only one who's gone through the very thing we're looking at right now.
Right.
Which is the crucifixion for the atonement that provides the forgiveness of sins.
Right.
I mean, we don't get right. He's the only one that can give us righteousness because he's the only one that's defeated sin, death, and hell.
Here's what we want, Eric. We want lots of ways to God as long as all those ways to God involve you being a good person.
Sure. And
that's,
not even
that's
good.
What we're all cool with.
Just like 55% good and 45% bad.
Right. Just that. Just as long as you're good as that wage, you're bad. You're like, this is the mantra of most people. Like, well, as long as you're like a good person.
Yeah.
And what they mean is that if you're good outweighs your bad, then you should be good to go. And what's being said there is that we want a merit based system that has innumerable entry points.
Yes. And the gospel says the exact opposite.
And the gospel says the exact opposite, and that's why it'll get you killed, and that's why it's offensive, because it says, no, we have an entirely grace-based system where the guys that came in the morning and the guys that showed up 5 minutes before quitting time all get paid the same, mm-hmm. but there's only one field to work in.
That's right. This is the scandal of the gospel, and this is and incidentally, just to note, when we talk about, you know, people that say, well, at least if your good outweighs your bad, then you should be fine. We also have to note that for many, most of the time, they are also the arbiters of what is good and what is bad.
Right.
So they get to decide that. It's not based on the eternal standard of God's word, but it's based on basically like whatever, you know, I happen to believe is right or wrong. And so again, it gives you infinite ways to possibly get into heaven. That is offensive that Jesus says, no, it has to be me or nothing.
Yep.
So speaking of that, speaking of the offense of this God who submits himself to weakness and impotence, like we see Jesus doing, I mean, he's, you know, God is allowing himself to be struck and slapped. You know, when they say prophesy to us, you Christ, who is it that struck you? He absolutely knows who struck him. He just doesn't give him the satisfaction of answering him. I mean, but imagine what it's like for Peter, who's following behind kind of closely. He wants to sort of stand up, you know, or he wanted to stand up for Jesus. You know, I will not let anything happen to you, man.
Yeah, pulled his sword out, tried to and hacked a dude's ear off.
Yeah.
Which means,
so,
which means,
I could just, when I think of this scene, like Peter watching the trial, because we know he is, and he sees Jesus being backhanded or slapped by these religious leaders and not doing anything, just getting bloody and getting spat on and not responding. I think that explains a little bit what happens next.
Yeah. By the way, side note, one of the most unanswerable questions in all of the Bible. Was Peter a very good swordsman or a very bad swordsman? Because to cut off a man's ear is extremely difficult if that's all you're trying to do.
Yes.
But if you're trying to cut off his head and you only get his ear, that's also means that you're very poor. You're a very poor swordsman. So I can't decide if Peter was a really good swordsman that just like unsheathed that thing and just like, I'm only taking off your ear, warning shot, which I'm like, that's pretty impressive. Or if he's like swinging that thing and like just totally botched it.
My read would be the second one.
I think so.
Peter the fisherman, I don't have a sense, is going to be an amazing marksman with his sword.
Yeah.
But, you know, one never knows.
Yeah. Side note, there you go.
So here's what we read about Peter as he's watching his Lord, his Messiah, be mocked and shamed. Now, Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came up to him and said, "You also were with Jesus, the Galilean." But he denied it before them all, saying, "I do not know what you mean." And when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him. And she said to the bystanders, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." And again, he denied it with an oath, "I do not know the man." After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, "Certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you." Then he began to invoke a curse upon himself and to swear, "I do not know the man." And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying of Jesus, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly.
That's got to be just the worst moment.
When
that rooster crows, that's just got to be like all the, just an absolute gut punch.
It's such a vivid retelling of the events. Because we know that Peter really was sincere in thinking that he would stand by Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Peter was extraordinarily close to Jesus. But when push comes to shove, and Peter starts getting asked about his relationship to Jesus, for whatever reason, and maybe we can explore that, he certainly does not stand by Jesus, but denies him in the strongest possible terms, calling a curse upon himself and swearing, "I do not know the man." So, by the third time, you get the sense of him almost desperately trying to prove his case. Like he's more and more afraid, almost like they're going to catch him or he's going to face the same kind of punishment that Jesus is. And yet, of course, when the rooster crows, he's reminded of the Lord's prediction to him, and it just breaks his heart. I mean, the words that wept bitterly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I think that Yeah, you have to remember that Peter is within eyeshot of everything that's going on. He sees Jesus, and some of the other gospel accounts are a little more descriptive of what's going on with Jesus at this point. But at this point, I mean, Jesus is being beaten and spat upon, it's a fearful thing. And then somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, you're with that guy, right?"
Yeah.
And all that boldness, and so you have this situation with Peter where, on one hand, he's like, why is he letting this happen?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I believe that this guy is God, right? And then on the other hand, then you're watching it happen, and somebody says, "Oh yeah, like you're part of that, right?" And you're like, "Man, like he doesn't seem interested in stopping it for himself. He's not going to stop it for me." And and there's a ton of fear that goes into that.
I really believe it's at this moment, the moment between his arrest and the trial, that Peter's illusions of what the kingdom was supposed to look like are completely shattered. That he recognizes, I was completely wrong about this Messiah. And frankly, it doesn't say it specifically in the text, but at this point, it seems like Peter might have stuck around out of friendship for Jesus, but I don't know that he stuck around out of faith in Jesus. In other words, like, I don't know at this point that he's still sold on the idea that Jesus really is the Christ.
Right.
Because he is seeing things that are just shattering his image of what the Christ is supposed to do. The Christ isn't supposed to be treated like this. The Christ is supposed to bring justice, not have all of this being brought down upon him. I mean, this just doesn't make any sense. And I think it's right here, somewhere around here, that Peter just goes, If I stick with this guy, why should I stick with this guy?
Right. Yeah.
Well, this is a defeated movement.
Yeah. I mean, he has to have the thoughts too of all the things that Jesus, I mean, we've gone through it now numerous times. I mean, how many times has Jesus said that he's going to die? And they're like, nope, no, no, no. Or they dismiss it. And at this point, Peter's got to be like, he ain't messing around. Like, they're going to kill him.
Yeah. And am I going to risk my own life for a Messiah who's going to die? Probably Peter was well aware of the other movements in which supposed Messiahs, which there were quite a few at that time, ended up being arrested, tried, and killed. And guess what happened to the movement? Done.
Yeah, and I mean,
one of the followers ended up being snuffed out and killed. I mean, he is well aware of what happens in these scenarios.
Yeah, and I think you can say, like, well, I mean, in those instances, Jesus also, said that he would. Right, you'd be raised as well. So why aren't you being like, well, okay, so this is going to happen when you're raised from the dead? Well, look, man, to say I'm going to die, end up hacking off a bunch of people and then they kill you, is not a tough that's not a tough prophecy to fulfill. So he doesn't necessarily think, oh, because he's going to die, because that's true, that he's going to be raised must absolutely be true too, because he said it. Because I can say to you right now, Eric, hey, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
There's easy ways for me to bring that about.
Sure.
However, if I say to you,
unfortunately, yes.
If I say to you, I'm going to die, but don't worry, then I'm going to be raised from the dead. Well, that's different. Peter's, I don't think that Peter's drawing the line like, well, you know, the dying part looks like it's going to happen, so I bet you the resurrection part happens too. And the reason you know this is because we see their reaction. They are very skeptical of that.
Yeah. Well, and the idea of resurrection too, of a single man raising from the dead, was so far removed from a Jewish conception of the resurrection. You can see this in Jesus' exchange with Mary and Martha when he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. You know, he asks Martha, you know, do you believe that I'm the resurrection, or do you believe that I can raise him from the dead? And Martha's response is, yes, I know that there'll be a resurrection in the last day. That was the conception they had, a general resurrection for all people. But Jesus is, you know, so when Jesus says, I'm going to raise alone after 3 days, N.T. Wright brings this up in his writings about the resurrection of Jesus. Like, this is it's a category they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the Greek-speaking world doesn't have this category either.
Right. And I mean, and you bring up a good point about, I mean, so you also have the fact that Peter knows about, even he saw Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead. Mm-hmm. And so, which tells you this, that even though Jesus said this was going to happen, and even though Peter saw Jesus do incredible things, I mean, he saw Jesus raise multiple people from the dead. Mm-hmm. This tells you the shakiness of faith. Yeah. This tells you that even though you walk the streets with Jesus, even though you are eyewitness to the miraculous power of God, when push comes to shove, you might be like, I don't know that guy.
Yeah.
You should be hesitant to think that you possess faith that is so much greater than that.
Yeah, not just hesitant, like you should just not think that. you should just recognize your faith is just as prone to falling and failure too. it's a lot more honest way of moving through life.
Yeah.
And it avoids the problem of going out and weeping bitterly when you know that. When you know initially, like, that your faith is not what carries you. Ultimately, his faithfulness is what carries you.
Mm-hmm.
So when morning came, we're in chapter 27 now, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death, and they bound him and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate, the governor. So now we've got the government involved. We've got the Roman government is, you know, officially going to be involved in the process of putting Jesus to death. Now the two sides, basically the leadership of the Jewish people and the leadership of the Roman Empire in that particular area, are going to come together to make sure that Jesus is crucified. And so just a note, I don't think we have to spend much time on this, but just a note to say that if anybody ever tries to make the case that, you know, the Jews are responsible for crucifying Jesus, this is not true. This is, everybody is responsible for crucifying Jesus. It's not just the Jews, it's the Romans. And as a matter of fact, it's you and I.
Right.
All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and Jesus had to go to the cross to die for all sins.
Well, I mean, there's this, I mean, think about this, and I will have, we're running out of time, but I will have much to say about this fact next week. If you think about the Apostles' Creed, the oldest of the Christian creeds, it doesn't say suffered under the Jews,
mm-hmm.
was crucified, dead and buried. It says suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, dead and buried. That's whose ultimate decision it is. It's Pilate.
That's right.
And the creed declares that. Anyone who tries to get all anti-Jewish on you because of the death of Christ, that's some nonsense. So of course, the religious leaders, they obviously play a huge role. Pilate didn't even really want to do it, but they strong arm into it, and so there's enough blame to go around to the Jewish leaders, to the Roman leaders, and to you and me. And this is the way it is, that we have all, the crucifixion is about the assumption of sin, mine and yours.
That's right.
And ultimately, it's not only men who kill Christ, but it's the wrath of God poured out on him, and that's on account of my sin and your sin. So
that's right.
We all have dirty hands when it comes to the crucifixion of God.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, it's through our dirty hands that nail him to a tree that ultimately God wins salvation for those of us with dirty hands. So as much as we can, and we should, you know, lament the fact that it's our sin that placed him there, we ought to rejoice even more still, because it's through that horrific instrument of the cross, which we'll begin to see more and more of next week, that our redemption is won, bought, and paid for forever.
Amen. That is it. We're out of time. Hey, guys, before we go, though, Eric, I feel like me and you both agree that if you are anywhere near North Dakota, anywhere near there, that you should probably come hang out with us May 19th. We're going to talk about the Psalms. We're going to eat some food. It's going to be a great time. I'll be there.
Eric, yeah, this isn't even debatable. I mean, if you're in Minnesota, go to North Dakota. If you're in South Dakota or Montana, go to North Dakota. I mean, you can do it. Make the trip.
Come out, hang out with us for a day. Chad Bird's going to be there. Ed Nugent's going to be there. Dan Van Voorhis is going to be there. Chris Roseborough is going to be there. We're going to be digging into the Psalms, digging into some food, hanging out. Just bring it on. You go over to ChristHoldFast.org, go to the events page. You'll see the North Dakota City event. We'd love to see you there. Eric, we'll see you next week.